When they were ready to depart, Luartarol gave the rope ladder a tug.
You're right, Anya. No use waiting out the storm. It should hold. We need to get back and find out who should be notified about all of this.
No, there is no reason to wait out the storm.
Zakarat's gaze traveled from Luartarol and the rope to Anya, and then reluctantly to the bag she'd forced him to leave behind. He shook his head in disappointment. He started climbing up the ladder. Luartarol held the bottom to steady it.
This storm might last for days, Anya Creed.
After you, Anya.
Anya waited until Zakarat was all the way up. Then she started, placing the flashlight in her pack and making sure the bag was secure over her shoulders. Now that they were leaving, her mind began to race with all that had to be done and her stomach churned. The authorities needed to be notified. She wanted to get a film crew here before looters or the authorities could spirit all of it away. They'd likely leave the coffins, though, she decided. They'd left the coffins in the other caves. Her crew could film them, and she and Luartarol had hundreds of shots of the treasure to supplement whatever show was put together. Work had intruded on her precious vacation after all. And she'd had to summon her sword to break through the earth wall. That part of her life had intruded too, but fortunately she'd managed to convince Luartarol he hadn't seen a sword. The hole in the cavern roof was just south of an overgrown and thoroughly muddy trail. Perhaps the cavern had been discovered by accident when someone went off the trail, walked across a thin section of rock, and broke through. Maybe that particular someone decided to hide the treasure inside. As she emerged, Anya spotted a tarp caught on a bush and guessed that it had been used to camouflage the hole, but the storm had blown it loose. The rain beat down on her helmet. It pelted her shoulders, almost painful in its intensity. The ground she and Zakarat stood on had turned into a sluicy mixture of mud and gravel. She stared at the trail, which was at best wide enough for a vehicle and more likely had been used for mountain bikes.
Difficult to get a jeep up here, Anya Creed.
Inaccessible, except as someone who is very determined.
But people did not carry the Buddhas here in their arms, Anya Creed. And they truly did not manage that hoard. They did not manage to hide that hoard in one trip. Many, many trips, maybe.
Zakarat didn't meet her gaze when she looked up. He was clearly still regretting that she'd convinced him to leave the treasure-stuffed pack behind. Anya thought he also looked a little bit ashamed, perhaps because of the looting, even if he was doing it to help his family. She looked around, trying to get her bearings. They were in a low spot in the mountains, and the rest of the range rose like the spiny backbone of some prehistoric creature all around them. The highest peaks were to the north. It was difficult to make out details because the vegetation was so thick and the trees so tall, and all of that was blurred into a miasma of greens and browns by the driving rain. She canted her head up and squinted through the rain. The clouds were swollen and the color of iron. Luartarol joined them and tugged the rope ladder up and rolled it. He worked the ends of the ladder free from the clamps that had been hammered into the stone.
No use making it easy on whoever has been visiting this spot. Let's get rid of this just in case they come back here before we do. Got to find a spot to hide this.
He pointed to a clump of high, thick ferns, the leaves of which were flattened down from the rain. Next to the ferns was a delicate-looking plant that had rosy blossoms and the shapes of parrots hanging upside down. Most of the flowers had been smashed against the ground by the storm.
See? We'll be able to find this place again. A parrot plant. Pretty rare even for this area. Find the parrot plant. Find the treasure.
He bent to stuff the coiled rope ladder under the fern and then straightened in surprise.
What's this? Anya. It seems this hiding place is already being used.
Anya slogged toward him and peered around the ferns.
A winch and cable. So that's how they got the treasure into the chamber.
Anya knelt and examined the winch.
But it's broken. The motor's burnt here and here. And they probably discarded it.
And we'll have to come back with another one.
We should get going.
Anya stood and looked at Zakarat.
Can you tell where we are? How far we might be from your jeep?
I'm not sure. We cannot be terribly far from anything, Anya Creed. There are many tribes in and around the mountains. More tribes now than there were a few years ago. A few thousand Karen from Myanmar, Burma, settled here not long ago to avoid fighting in the country. Other tribes divide.
Karen?
Yes, but not the long-necked ones that the tourists like to see. So if I cannot find a jeep, I will find a tribe. I will get home, and you will get to your lodge. And this muddy little road must lead somewhere, yes? We will not be lost for long.
Zakarat started walking without another word. Anya gave a last look at the cavern opening, and then plodded forward, passing Zakarat in a few strides. If he didn't know where they were, she might as well take the lead. The rain felt good against her skin, neither cold nor warm, but more than tolerable on this summer day. It smelled good, chasing out the last trace of mustiness from the cave and all the guano. It continued to grate on her, the notion that Zakarat had stolen some of the treasure, but she did her best to force her displeasure down, and she decided she would not tell any authorities of his theft. Let Zakarat provide well for his family and other Shan members. She couldn't fault a man for wanting to do that, and she'd prevented him from taking out the rest after all, and she too was guilty of removing the skull bowl. She hitched her pack higher onto her back. The bowl pressed against her spine through the canvas. Zakarat poked her shoulder.
Anya Creed, what is this finder's fee you talked about? When will I get this fee? How many baht will it be?
I don't know how many baht. A finder's fee is typically what an agency gives someone for discovering a thing of value or interest. Sometimes it is a percentage of the value of the find, occasionally negotiated. Sometimes museums or universities give them, and sometimes...
I should have taken more treasure. And you should not have stopped me.
As she walked along, Anya reflected that, at least, the odd and chilling sensation had not returned since she'd discovered the bowl and its contents. But who put the bowl and the other treasures in the chamber, and why? Where did they come from, and where were they going? She shook her head, knowing the answers would not come to her on this trail. She needed her computer and her contacts, and that wouldn't happen until they made it back to the lodge and then the nearest city. So she focused on other things, the soggy beauty of the trees and the mountains and...
Run!
Anya dived off the trail. The men followed behind her, and she slowed so that Luar Taro could slide past, arm protectively around Zakarat's shoulders as he shoved him into the brush. The pommel of her sword formed in her hand. She hadn't even been aware of calling it. She instantly dismissed it. She didn't want Luar Taro to see it again, but more than that, it was useless at a distance and against machine guns. As she ran, she looked back over her shoulder and caught a glimpse of their attackers. The men were dark-clad and Asian. She had only a flash of them as she left the trail, but she knew there were four in the jeep, and more in a second vehicle that was roaring up the trail. Another man was on a four-wheel ATV. She couldn't make out anything else, as she was moving too quickly in an effort to avoid being shot. They had machine guns, but she could hear pistols as well. They shouted in what she thought was Vietnamese. There was a loud, long exchange, and she could pick up only a few groups of words in the mix. What little Vietnamese she'd learned through the years had been from watching travelogues and foreign action films and visiting one of her favorite New York restaurants. She wasn't entirely sure she was catching the phrases correctly. She heard the men abandon their jeeps and run after them. The men slipped and slid in the mud and over the rain-slick ferns just as she did. But these men were probably fresh and rested, having ridden in the jeeps up the mountains, while she and her companions were spent from their ordeals in the caves. Since they probably couldn't outrun the men, she had to get her companions to a hiding place. Then she would double back with her sword and get some answers.
Anya!
Behind you, Lou!
She was, though she could have easily passed him by. She stayed behind the two men, hoping that she would be the target, and also the first to turn and fight if she had to. As she ran, dodging leaves and branches that slapped at her face, trying to stay upright as her boots skated on mud and leaves, her mind worked. It all fit together somehow. The treasure, the dog tags, and now the men chasing them. To Anya, it sounded like five or six men were in pursuit. Wild pistol shots still flew over their heads and off into the jungle. Thank God the ones still firing were lousy shots. How many men were there? And did they all have guns? Mud and rock spit up and bit into the backs of her legs. Something slammed into her back.
Move! Move, move, move!
She could stop and stand her ground, maybe give Lou and Zakarat time to get away. But the odds were so much against her that she couldn't risk it. But maybe she could draw them away.
Keep going straight!
Anya peeled off away from Zakarat and Luartaro and slowed just a bit. She slapped the bushes and ferns as she ran, making as much noise as she could to draw the gunman's attention. It was a good plan, but it didn't work. Luartaro, gentleman that he was, hadn't followed her instructions. When she veered off, he had too. She wheeled around just as one of the pursuers slid to a stop and lifted his machine gun. Tiny pinpoints of fire flashed. Bullets tore into the leaves near Anya's head.
Down!
Wood splinters exploded from a tree. She peeked out just enough to place the source of the gunfire. One of the men had found a good spot to see down the side of the mountain and was firing in an arc. Bullets and mud and pieces of pulverized greenery sprayed everywhere, each arc getting closer to them. Lightning flashed. It was almost like the impressions she got when she first touched the skull bowl, the storm that had raged in her mind.
Run, Zack! Run for all you're worth!
Zakarat tried to obey. He was several yards away from them, and Anya could see him leap to his feet and turn to run. But as nimble as he was afraid. He whirled and fell into a tangled mass of vines. Luartaro slipped and slid over to him and tugged him free. He turned around to make sure Anya was near, and then he wheeled and followed Zakarat's mad dash down the side of the mountain. Anya leaped over a low bush and followed, dodging from side to side in case their attackers could still see them. She struck a low branch. Her feet slid out from under her. She grabbed at a bush, a tree, but everything tore off in her fingers. And suddenly she was sliding on her back, picking up speed. She scrabbled for another bush, and for a fraction of a second thought it was going to hold, but then it too failed her. She had time for a fleeting glance at Luartaro and Zakarat. Like her, they were sliding wildly down the mountainside. Like big ball bearings in an arcade game, they caromed out of sight. Anya didn't hesitate. She reached for the sword in her mind. She rolled and at the same time stabbed out at a clump of bushes. Her shoulders jerked painfully as her mad slide was stopped short. She scrambled to her feet. With her companions out of sight, though perhaps not safely so, she would confront any who followed. It was their best chance of getting off the mountain alive. She spun and crouched, ready to meet her pursuers. She immediately spotted four men, several dozen yards away and closing in. There were more, she knew, but the others might have returned to the jeeps. She'd worry about them later. One of the four saw her and swiveled his machine gun up. Bullets chewed up the trunk of an acacia tree near her. She leaped for the tree to use it as cover. Wood splinters stung her face. The men raced toward her. Anya pushed off from the tree and darted toward another thick trunk, barely managing to slip around it before more shots plowed into the vegetation. At least they were concentrating on her. Perhaps Luartaro and Zakarat were safely away after all. She listened intently. She could tell the men had split up and were coming at her from two directions. So they were smart and organized, possibly military, definitely with some training. Anya took off on a straight course, tucking and rolling into a smaller target as bullets struck the ground at her feet and splashed her face with mud. With a last prayer that Luartaro and Zakarat were all right, she focused her attention on her fight. She sprinted for a clump of willowy trees and darted between the trunks. Bullets followed her, but not as many as before. She risked a quick peek and saw that two of the men had stopped to reload their pistols. The other two were a little farther back and to the south. She leaped toward the first two men, raising the sword above her head. One of the men saw her. He rammed the clip into his pistol and brought it up. She pulled the blade free and brought it down again. She grabbed his gun, brought it up, and fired at his companion. She dropped the gun. She hated guns. Anya allowed herself a few moments before she rose and barreled toward the two men with machine guns. She spotted them through a break in the foliage. They were both running toward their fallen companions. She planted herself against a tree, her backpack pressed against the small of her back. She spared a thought for the skull bowl, hoping it hadn't been damaged by the carnival ride in the mud and all the jumping and running. No time to check now. She glanced around the tree and yanked her head back. No sign of the men. She peeked the other way. One man was easing through a tangle of vines, leading with his machine gun. the second man was behind him.
Two down, two to go.
It seemed that no more men from the jeeps had come down the mountainside after her. They'd probably gone back to the cavern to check on their treasure. In Anya's experience, greed almost always trumped common sense. Bullets suddenly whizzed past her. She dropped down tight against the roots of the tree, hoping to be a smaller target. She pushed away from the tree and somersaulted down the slope. Last instant as she reached the safety of another thick trunk.
Some vacation. Some wonderful vacation.
She sprang away again to the southeast, slipping and falling just as the bullets cut through the air where her head had been a heartbeat before. She rolled behind a clump of ferns and crawled toward the men. She cursed herself for throwing away the gun. The men slogged closer, sweeping their weapons in a waist-level arc and firing blindly. But as long as they were firing so wildly, it meant they didn't know where she was. She stopped crawling and lay flat. The pack and its skull bowl were heavy against her back. They passed her, not noticing her among the ferns, and she silently rose up behind them, slipping the pack from her back so she could move more fluidly. She took one step, then another, sword raised over a shoulder, holding her breath. Lightning flashed. Her blade cut through the back of the lagging man's neck. His head lolled to the side and he staggered forward, then fell. She rushed toward the last man, who had spun to face her. He'd moved too quickly, however. He lost his footing in the mud. A burst from his machine gun went wild and struck his fallen comrade's body. She charged him, leading with the pommel of her sword and slamming it hard against his chest. She kicked out and knocked the machine gun from his grasp. Anya shoved him, and with the ground so slick, he couldn't keep his balance. He fell back, and she dropped on top of him, planting her knees on his chest and hands on his shoulders. She dismissed the sword. She dug her fingers into his flesh. He struggled to push her off. She raised him up by his shoulders and slammed the back of his head against the ground. He went limp. She hadn't been forced to kill all of them. She straightened and tipped her face up to the rain. Somewhere she'd lost the helmet that Sakurat had provided. She supposed he'd be annoyed. She stuck out her tongue and took in drops of cool rain. Her hair was plastered to her skull. Funny that she'd even worry about losing a helmet, considering all that had happened. Sakurat would have plenty of money to buy whatever caving equipment he wanted. She focused until her breath became steady, and at the same time she concentrated, listening for traces of more men coming down the side of the mountain. Some would surely come in search of their missing comrades, but they would find only bodies and this one unconscious man. Anya summoned up her strength to break the trigger sear, ruining the machine gun. She did the same to the dead man's machine gun. She took a holstered pistol from the unconscious one's waist. She tugged free an extra clip and put it in her pocket. She preferred using her sword, but it was no good at a distance. The pistol would be for just in case. Just in case more men came down the side of the mountain. Saving one of the machine guns would have given her a better edge, but in her mind, that was not an option. Too many bullets, as far as Anya was concerned. Working quickly, Anya retrieved the pistols from the other two men, removed the clips, and tossed them away. Anya slung her pack gently over her shoulders, again feeling the skull bowl rest against her back. Surely if it was broken, it wouldn't feel so solid. She briefly considered climbing back up to the trail to assess the number of men and take some pictures. But she had Luartaro and Zakarat to think about. She started off in search of them. Anya heard men shouting, but their voices were growing fainter as she put more distance between herself and the jeeps that were higher up on the mountain trail. How long did she have before they discovered the bodies of their fellows and managed to track her? And would she have enough time to find Luartaro and Zakarat and get them to safety before reinforcements came looking? Anya knew that the gunmen couldn't afford to let her and her companions escape, not if they wanted to keep their treasure chamber a secret. It was all a matter of how many minutes she had. Anya searched for the path that Luartaro and Zakarat had slipped down. She guessed it was a little to the north, and so she angled that way, moving as fast as possible in the tangle of jungle growth, doing her best not to get caught in the ground plants. The foliage was thick where she traveled, and she had to come to a complete stop a couple of times to squeeze through a tight weave of plants. What was proving to be obstacles could also work to her advantage, she hoped, making her more difficult to be spotted from above.
Ah, damn!
Anya caught her hair in some low branches and with a vicious yank tugged it free. Branches tore at her clothes and scratched her bare leg and face. She summoned a sword. Slashing branches might not be as quiet as she wanted, but perhaps they wouldn't hear it over the storm. Lightning continued to flash overhead, sending bright yellow and white fingers through the thick iron-colored cloud bank. She started hacking in time with her heartbeat, using the sword like a machete and making a little better headway. She heard nothing but the rain and her thrashing. She didn't hear the men's shouts anymore. The incline was steep one moment, gradual the next, and so she had to watch her footing on top of concentrating on everything else. The sword was impossibly sharp, and not for the first time she wondered if someone had wielded it before Joan of Arc. And could Joan see her this very moment and watch how the famous weapon was being used to slice through the Thai jungle?
Stop it. Where are you, Lou? Where?
Anya forced herself to focus on moving ever faster and looking for a hint that Luartaro and Zakarat had passed this way. At the edge of her vision, she saw a slick patch of mud and tamped-down grass, evidence that her companions had caromed down it in their accidental mad dash. She'd almost missed it and gone too far north, but she picked her way back to the spot, careful not to step in the gush of muddy water that ran like a stream in a furrow it had created. Following the slick, she spotted broken branches and smashed ferns, more evidence of their passage. The gunmen, if they happened this way, would spot the signs too. Anya considered slowing her pace and trying to cover up the evidence, but quickly rejected the notion and instead cautiously increased her speed and tried again to listen for Luartaro. Once more she heard shouting, but it was from above and in a foreign tongue.
Hurry, hurry, hurry!
She continued to hack with her sword. Then she came to a tight weave of plants and a twist of branches that threatened to block her way.
Anya! Anya, you're all right!
Anya cringed, practically running down the slope and releasing the sword. Then she pitched forward, slipping in the mud. She rolled several yards before crashing into a trunk and getting the wind knocked out of her. She scrambled to her feet, wincing at her sore ribs and glancing furiously around for the backpack that had come loose. Luartaro grabbed her from behind and held her close.
Anya, I was afraid they shot you. I was...
Shh!
She spun around in his embrace. She tipped her face up, meaning to tell him more about the gunman. After a moment, she extricated herself.
There are several men left, and...
Left? What did you...
Anya patted the gun she'd stuck in her waistband.
One of the men fell, Lou. I got his gun, fired, and...
Killed him? You really are amazing, Anya.
I had to do something. It was a lucky shot, was all.
I'm so glad you are all right.
Where's Zakarat, Lou?
At the bottom. He's hurt a little. Twisted his ankle pretty badly when we went for a mud ride. I told him just sit tight while I went looking for you, and... Do you...
Hear them? Yes, they're coming down looking for us. I can't tell how many...
Anya spotted the pack she'd dropped and pulled away from him to retrieve it. The canvas was slick with mud, but she was too. She slung it over her shoulder, her ribs protesting the motion, and she rejoined him. She wanted to check on the skull bowl, but decided that could wait. Its condition was immaterial given the greater concern of the gunman.
Too many men. However many there are of those men, there are too many.
Luartaro moved slower than she would have liked, but he was being careful to pick his way across roots that looked like thick black snakes, so much of the earth around them having washed away. The slower speed gave her a better opportunity to listen for signs of pursuit.
Hell of a storm, yes?
They'd reached the bottom of the mountain, and an expanse of water stretched before them.
That little river? Not as little as before. There!
On the other side, Zakarat sat on a flat piece of rock, the umbrella-like leaves of a weeping tree sheltering him from the brunt of the storm.
It's just wide. And fast. But not terribly deep. I got Zack across without too much trouble. Let's go. Let's hurry.
Anya passed him by, taking the lead and edging out into the water. It tugged her, and for an instant she thought about letting herself go with its current. It would be easier than dealing with the gunman and the storm and whatever else God and Thailand wanted to throw at her. Let the river take her where it wanted. But it was against her nature to simply give up, and so she forged across, leg muscles burning from the day's ordeal. The water swirled around her hips, and she reached a hand to her waistband, pulling out the mud-caked gun and holding it up with one hand, taking the camera out of her breast pocket and holding it high with the other. She didn't want to risk the river ruining either. She especially didn't want to lose the camera, with all of its pictures of the coffins and the treasure. Anya heard Luartaro sloshing behind her. The water was up to her shoulders in the middle of the river, the current more insistent there. But Anya was determined and reached the other side, climbing out and plodding to Zaccarat, and then looking over her shoulder to spot Luartaro doing the same.
The treasure would not have mattered on your creed. The pack I filled would not have made it down the mountain with me.
But at least you made it down.
Anya knelt by him and looked out across the river for signs of the gunman. She glanced at his foot. He'd taken his left boot off, and the ankle was terribly swollen and discolored. She suspected it was broken rather than sprained, and she knew he would not be able to get the boot back on.
I know you should rest, and we could all do with a little rest. But we have to keep going, Zaccarat. Those men...
will be after us because of what we saw, I know.
Can you...
walk, Anya Creed? I have to, won't I?
And I will help you. Come on, let's get away from the river. They might be able to see us here.
Luataro helped Zaccarat up, pulling the Thai man's arm across his shoulders and taking the weight off his left leg.
Any idea who they are, Zack? Did you recognize any of them?
Some very bad men, I know that. Very rich and very bad men. And they are not Thai. They are Vietnamese or maybe Laotian. They are not Burmese. I have Burmese friends.
Anya struck out perpendicular to the river, eyes downcast, and choosing a path across the springy ground cover that might not reveal their boot prints. She tried to avoid stretches of mud where it would be easier to spot their tracks. Maybe the gunmen had given up and were concentrating on their treasure, she hoped. Maybe because of the storm and the swollen river and the treacherous terrain, they had decided to let her and her companions go and spend their time loading up the jeeps with gold. That pretty much ended her wishful thinking. She wondered if she should go after the second batch of men who had chased them across the river. But there was still Luartaro and Zaccarat to consider, as well as the automatic weapons that she really had little defense against, save for the stolen Japanese pistol that looked so old it might have been manufactured during World War II. So running was her best approach, at the moment.
Zaccarat, any idea where we are? Any place close to that trail that leads to Nam Lud Cave or our resort?
Not too close to that cave, I think, Anya Creed. We got twisted and turned around inside that mountain. Hard to tell just where we are. But I do know that we are east of the river. East of the river and somewhere north of your resort. And so we are still lost. I would tell you to follow the river south, but I'm not sure that is a good idea right now.
Too easy to be seen.
Anya picked her way in a southeastern direction and increased her pace, forcing Luartaro to struggle along faster with the injured Thai guide. She knew Zaccarat was in pain, but making him go faster was brutally necessary.
You said there are villages around here.
Plenty of villages by the river and all around the mountains. We could hide in one. I would not think those men would follow us into a hill tribe village. Too many eyes and too many questions, yes? They would want to avoid the villages.
Then let's find one of those villages. And let's find it in a hurry.
Certainly someone in a village would have a jeep or ATV or some form of transportation they could use, Anya thought. And if nothing else, she could leave Zaccarat there to be looked after by Luartaro, while she doubled back and dealt with the gunmen, picking them off one by one. No more running. The gunfire let Anya know the men were persistent, but it did not sound so close this time. Maybe the men had not yet picked up their trail and were firing blindly, or maybe they had found something else to shoot.
This has been one crazy vacation. Why did they ever talk you into going to that spirit cave, Anya? Why couldn't I have settled for an elephant ride or visiting the long-necked women? Or why didn't we just stay in?
Anya smiled in spite of their dire situation and forced their pace faster still. Questions continued to dance in her mind. If the men were Vietnamese or Laotian, how did they get into Thailand with all those weapons? Help from the locals? Through a place where there were no border posts? She also wondered what all the treasure was about, and how far the gunmen would go to find her and her companions to keep word of their treasures silenced. And why put it there, in a cavern in the northern Thailand mountains? Why put the treasure there? Anya caught sight of a trail to the south, doing a double take to make sure that's what it was. Then she cut a path toward it, pulling at vines and bending branches to squeeze through here and there, and looking over her shoulder to make sure Luartaro and Zakarat were reasonably close behind. She'd not heard any gunshots in the past few minutes, but she wasn't allowing herself to relax. Anya would not let her guard down until she was certain her companions were safe, and she had notified the authorities about all of this. And get a film crew, she thought. The trail was narrow and well-traveled, as evidenced by the utter lack of vegetation on it. But it was also slick with mud, and the still-pounding rain had created a gully stretching roughly down the center of it. The depression was caused by a vehicle, she decided after a quick look, most likely a motorcycle. And that meant the possibility of fast transportation. With a 50-50 chance of picking the right direction, Anya chose to follow the trail east, away from the main river and the gunmen. Anya checked her watch, curious how much time they'd spent in the mountain. But the crystal had cracked, and it was water-filled. It had stopped at 11:10 a.m. She paused and turned to ask Luartaro if his watch had fared better, instead deciding that just like the lyrics to an old Chicago song, it didn't really matter what time it was. She knew that it wasn't yet evening. Despite the dark gray clouds, there was too much light for that.
You all right, Anya?
Fine, Lou. I'm fine.
It didn't take them long to reach the end of the trail, which opened into a small village. The trio breathed a collective sigh of relief. The village consisted mostly of bamboo and thatch-woven buildings, with a few made of sheet metal panels. Most of them were small, with open doorways. But two of the structures were long and shaped like shoeboxes, as if they might serve as a community meeting house and a school. These two had several windows, all with shutters closed against the still driving rain. Benches and stools stretched along the outer walls and near some of the muddy paths that wound around the buildings and rain-battered flower and herb gardens. There were no signs of modern amenities, such as power lines or electric lights, or, to Anya's dismay, vehicles. Still, to Anya's eyes, the village seemed beautiful, primitive and peaceful, almost magical, as if such a village might have looked just like this 1,000 years ago. She saw several villagers crowded on a bench beneath the awning of one of the large buildings. Under another overhang, children played with a small white dog. She watched as a few youths darted out into the rain in a game of tag. Near them, a boy floated a wooden toy boat in a big puddle. The people wore simple clothes, sleeveless shirts and straight pants without pockets. The colors were mostly green and pink pastels with a smattering of khaki. The children were dressed mostly in robin's egg blue, a few of them with bright red shorts that stood out. Anya tugged her shirt out of her waistband and covered the gun stuck there. As she brushed aside a large fern leaf and edged into the village, the people saw her and came out from under their shelters to meet them, a dozen voices chattering all at once, not a single word of which she could make out.
We need help for Zakarat.
Anya was hoping someone understood English, but from the expressions on the villagers' faces, there was no comprehension. She gestured behind her to Luartaro, who was still propping up Zakarat.
Nous avons besoin de l'aide pour Zakarat. Necesitamos algo de ayuda para Zakarat.
After a moment, two men moved forward, one of them waving to the closest long building and taking Zakarat's other side and nudging him in that direction. If they hadn't understood the words, they understood from Zakarat's appearance that he was hurt. Inside, it was dry and cozy. A few windows were open to let in some light, though most of the place remained in shadows. Anya did not see any lamps or candles to improve the situation. She slipped off her backpack and sat it inside the doorway and contemplated taking off her soggy boots to give her feet a chance to dry out. She decided not to allow herself that luxury, at least not yet. She needed to look for the gunmen as soon as Zakarat and Luartaro were settled. Zakarat tried again to speak to the people, and finally nodded to one man with a sun-weathered face and a thick shock of inky hair. He said something in return. Zakarat grimaced when Luartaro and one of the villagers helped him up onto a table at the back of the single large room. It had the look of a classroom, with rows of benches and narrow tables that could serve as desks, a table and chair at the front of the room, and a bank of shelves stuffed to overflowing with books and papers. Anya had noted that nearly all of the buildings were either made of bamboo stalks tied together or woven into thatch panels. Even the floor of this building was bamboo.
They are tins, Anya Creed.
Tins?
Yes, that man, Rangsan, said they are tins. Tins had lived in Thailand for a long, long time, maybe more than 1,000 years. And some members of the main hill tribes have joined them. Tins have preserved their way of life, making little changes since they migrated here from China. There are said to be less than 30,000 of them in this country. Most of their villages are in Nan province, but some are further north near the mountains, like this one. The tins build with bamboo, as you can see, lots of bamboo. The tins are practitioners of Sweden agriculture, my father taught me. They farm glutinous rice. Some are Buddhists, but many are just considered animists.
Their language...
Anya tried to keep her frustration in check. She enjoyed the local history lesson, but now was not the time for it. She needed to be on her way, to find the gunmen if possible, and to find the authorities. She watched as one of the villagers brought in a wooden bowl filled with water and gently cleaned Zakarat's ankle. Another villager stood by with a strip of cloth ready to wrap it.
Their language, Zakarat. What do they speak? It doesn't sound quite like Thai. Can you make them understand?
Dins, I guess. They speak Dins. Like I said, most of the tribes in Thailand have their own languages, Anya Creed. But this man here, Rangsan, he seems to understand me well enough.
Tell Rangsan about the man with the guns who chased us down the mountain. These people need to know about the guns.
Zakarat was not as quick with his speech, repeating a few of the words so that the villager could better understand, and talking longer than Anya would have liked.
They do not need to know about the treasure. They do not need to go into the mountain looking for gold and finding trouble.
Ask Rangsan about transportation, a jeep, a motorcycle. What is the name of this village? Do you know where we are, Zakarat? Are we anywhere near your jeep? Can one of them draw us a map?
This place has no name, Anya Creed.
Zakarat shrugged his shoulders at the rest of her questions and translated.
It goes without saying that there would be no cell phone or satellite phone. But transportation and directions? If they have a map or can draw a map, give us a better reference to Nam Lud and our resort, the river, anything. Otherwise, I'm about half a heartbeat from heading off on my own.
Zakarat kept speaking slowly, again repeating words. Anya gestured for him to speed up, but he shook his head and kept at it.
Yeah, how far are we from the resort? From a town? Hurry, Zakarat.
Hurry. You do not understand tribal life, Anya Creed. These villages are ancient and remote. You cannot do things quickly here. And you cannot go too slowly because time is not measured in hours or maybe even days. I doubt anyone here owns a watch. Time is measured in seasons and years. And distance, it is not a measure of kilometers or miles, but in time, how long it takes to get from one place to the next. And that depends entirely on the method of transportation, how long your legs are. So, Anya Creed, some of your questions cannot be answered.
I appreciate their way of life. I envy it a little. But Zakarat...
Anya Creed, a man named Erwan, someone already went to get him, has an old motorcycle. They also have a few bicycles and a good cart and an ox. Another man has gone in search of a doctor who lives nearby.
A bicycle will do little good in all this mud. And I don't need an ox, Zakarat. I can walk faster than an ox. A motorcycle would be good, though. But I'll settle for a map. Ask anyone if they can draw...
I already asked that. One of them is drawing you a map, the teacher at the front of the room. Anya Creed, I've been thinking a lot about that treasure. Maybe those men came to the cave because they were worried about all the rain. Maybe they wanted to move as much treasure as possible before that cave flooded. Maybe I should go back with an ox and cart and take whatever they could not haul away. I could find the place again, I know that. The men will be gone by the time I get back there. We could take whatever they...
Sakura, you can't take the chance that the men will be gone. If they are still up there, they will kill you. And the treasure will do you no good if you're dead. Your life is worth more than all of that gold.
At that moment, a broad-shouldered young man in khaki pants and a pale rose-colored t-shirt entered. He exchanged several words with Rang San, who in turn spoke to Zakarat. After a moment, Zakarat translated for Anya.
This is Erwan, the man with the motorcycle. He says you can borrow his...
We will pay him to borrow his motorcycle.
You have only to promise that you will bring it back when you can. He doesn't care about Bat beyond using it to buy gasoline.
I promise. I promise to bring it back as soon as possible. And give him Bat for gas. Please thank him for me. And please remember to tell all of these people about the men and the guns and...
Anya rushed past Erwan, reaching under her shirt and drawing the pistol. She stopped just outside the doorway and took everything in. The children who had been playing streamed into the other large building across a mud-slick clearing, shooed by a gangly woman in a sleeveless pink shift. Others looked out from windows and doorways, eyes fixed on the body of the small white dog that one of the gunmen had shot. Anya looked around the corner and saw four men, shoulder to shoulder, machine guns raised at waist height. They were some of the dark-clad men who had come from the jeeps on the mountain. Anya recognized their hard faces. One stepped forward, fired another burst into the dog's carcass, and hollered something she couldn't understand. A moment later, he repeated it in English.
The foreigners! The stranger! Surrender them now! Everyone die!
With another burst of gunfire, they advanced into the village. Anya whirled in the opposite direction from the gunman, hugging the building and darting past a bench, and slipping around the far end of the school, leading with the pistol in the event more men had come in from another direction. No one else had, at least that she could see. Apparently, there were just the four, and they hadn't seen her yet.
Surrender the strangers! The white woman and two men! Surrender them now! Surrender, or we will kill you one by one!
I give up! Don't shoot anyone! Leave these people alone! It's me you want!
No!
Anya slipped around the next corner, intending to come up from the other side, where the men still would not be able to see her.
No, 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 Luartaro.
The woman's not here. I lost her in the jungle. Who knows what happened to her? It's just me. Take me and leave this village alone.
Surrender to us!
Anya peeked around the next corner, spotting the four men and immediately drawing her head back. They'd advanced a little farther into the village. Another look, and she couldn't see them anymore. They'd passed out of her line of sight.
Please, leave the villagers alone!
On your knees!
Anya crept around the next corner of the building.
Where is the woman? You lie! She is not in the jungle. She is here. Send her out!
Here. I'm right here.
Anya spun around the last edge, brought the pistol up, and fired at the closest man. She struck him in the hand, and he dropped the machine gun. He fell to his knees, clutching his bloody fingers. The next two charged her, firing, the fourth staying put, crouching to make himself a small target and shooting at something she couldn't see. Anya managed to squeeze off two more shots before the pistol jammed. One of the two men pitched forward, grabbing at his chest where she'd hit him. The other grinned wildly and ran at her, sweeping his gun in a tight arc and firing. Bullets chewed into the corner of the building, splintering the bamboo. Anya ducked back around, tossed the pistol, and called for the sword. Before it had fully formed, the man fired at her again, ripping up more of the building. Needle-fine pieces of bamboo flew into Anya's arms and legs. She gripped the sword and raised it back over her shoulder and whipped it to the side as he fired again. She felt blood running down her arm, hotter and thicker than the rain. The wind gusted at that moment, and the man squinted in the force of the rain that was coming sideways at him. Anya closed in, and as he fired again, she brought the sword down, aiming for the machine gun. She struck it and his right forearm. She reached out and grabbed the gun as it fell, tossing it wide. She brought up her leg, kicking him in the gut and sending him on his back, muddy water splashing up around him. He writhed, grabbing at his arm, as she raced past him and rounded the corner of the building to face the fourth gunman.
Dear God, no!
Anya spotted Luartaro face down in the mud and the final gunman standing over him. The one whose hand she'd shot was struggling to his feet and reaching for a small holster at his side. She knocked him over, kicking him in the jaw as she headed toward the last man standing with a gun.
Hey, hey! It's me you want. Me, you thief! Murderer!
He fired as he turned. Anya dropped and somersaulted as she closed the distance. Anya brought the sword around with as much strength as she could summon. The tip of the blade caught the end of the machine gun and turned it, bullets still spitting and striking the school building again. Anya pulled the blade back again and brought it down and around. It struck the machine gun once more and the gunman's fingers, slicing a few of them off. He tried to bring the gun up again, pulling the trigger with his thumb. The gun went off as he went down. Bullets spit into the mud and into Anya's leg. She took two steps toward the man she'd just killed and fell forward into a puddle. Anya awoke on the same table Zakharat had occupied, a coarse blanket draped over her, another folded blanket serving as a pillow. Her head pounded, her right arm ached terribly, and her right leg felt nothing. She propped herself up on her elbows. A man well into his middle years tended her numb leg. Someone had brought a lantern or two into the schoolroom, the glow filled with gnats and illuminating the concerned faces of the villagers and the craggy visage of the doctor. She remembered Zakharat saying someone had gone to get a doctor who lived nearby. A white man, though well-tanned. He was clearly not Thai.
Hello there. I expected you to be out for quite some time longer, miss.
Greed.
She opened her mouth to speak again, but one of the villagers held a ladle up to her lips and encouraged her to drink. The mixture was a pulpy, fruity nectar that tasted sweet and went down her throat slowly. She nodded her thanks to the villager.
Well, Miss Greed.
Anya. Call me Anya. And you are?
Nigel Willingson, or Doc, as the Tins call me.
Thank you for taking care of me, Dr. Willingson. Where are...
Nigel will do, or just Doc. Nothing formal for me anymore. Doc, actually, I prefer that.
The man glanced over his shoulder at a broad-shouldered woman with a careworn face and spoke quickly in what Anya assumed was the Tin's language.
They want to know why the men came after you. What you did to make those men so angry they would shoot you and kill little Keith's dog. They want to know where you came from and when you'll be leaving. These are peaceful people, Miss Greed.
Anya, nothing so formal for me either.
We can deal with their questions later, Anya. Right now, I need to deal with your wounds. I've already plucked 3 bullets out of your calf. I have 1 left to go. They tore into your muscle and did some damage. But nothing you can't recover from. It certainly could have been much worse. You could have lost the leg. And I want to get those bamboo splinters out of your arm. Give you a tetanus shot, just in case. Or have you had one recently? There's a good risk of infection, all the mud and muck you were rolling in. Have you had a tetanus shot?
He didn't wait for her answer, sticking a needle into her leg.
Then I need to see your friend.
My...
Mr. Lotto?
He's not dead. Lou is...
Ah, Lou, much easier to pronounce. I like that. Lou. No, he is not dead. But he does have a concussion. He's on another table, a desk. You can't see him for all the tins. Nearly half the village has managed to fit in here. Curious they are. Your Lou said one of those bad men hit him hard on the top of his head with machine gun stock. I have him resting. You're my immediate concern.
He spoke more to the broad-shouldered tins woman, punctuating his speech with a clacking sound that a few others nearby echoed.
Yes, we'll deal with their questions shortly, Anya. I want to finish patching you up and make sure you're cleaned up properly and are strong enough to travel. We need to get you to a real clinic.
Anya lifted the blanket and dropped it back down. She was naked. Looking over the edge of the table, she saw a wooden bowl filled with muddy water and her pile of mud-caked clothes.
That would be Somme's work, Anya. I asked her to clean you up a bit. You must have been wearing 10 pounds of jungle mud. Somme will find you something else to wear. You should be in a hospital, actually. A clinic doesn't have near the facilities. You and Lou and two of those disagreeable fellows, who you took out with a sword, Somme tells me, should all be in a hospital. But there are few roads, and they are all flooded, and it's still raining and dark as pitch outside, so you'll have to settle for my ministrations at the moment. But we'll put you and Lou in an ox cart in the morning when hopefully the weather lets up a little bit, and we'll get you to a proper place where people far more skilled than I can look after you. Don't know what we'll do with the two disagreeable fellows. The ox cart won't hold all of you.
Listen, Doc, I...
No, you listen. You're my patient, much as I'd rather you not be. Much as I'd rather none of you folks were injured in this village. I'm not a medical doctor, Anya. I'm a veterinarian. A retired one, at that. Retired to this beautiful country to be left alone and not to be bothered by people shooting at one another.
A veterinarian? Retired?
Anya finally succumbed to the sedative he'd given her.
Oh.
Anya's head was pounding when she awoke the next morning, feeling the sun stream in on her face. She wasn't on the table in the school any longer. She was on a thick sleeping pallet in one of the villagers' homes. Luartaro sat next to her, propped against the wall, eyes closed, and head wrapped in a pale pink bandage that had a blood stain on the side. It took her only a moment to realize he was sleeping, his breathing deep and regular. He was wearing different clothes, a pale green tank top over baggy trousers that had cargo pockets down the sides. He'd stuffed the pockets with something so that they looked like the jowls of a chipmunk that had been foraging. The trousers looked several inches too short for his tall frame, the green tank a size too small. She smiled. The latter made his muscles stand out. He was barefoot, his mud-caked boots sitting nearby. Her arms ached, though not as much as they did the night before, and she felt a dull pain in her right leg, the numbness having worn off. All in all, however, she pronounced herself in more than reasonable condition given what she'd been through. Her stomach rumbled. Anya tended to eat a lot because she was active, and she hadn't had anything since very early yesterday morning.
Gotta find something to eat.
Anya made a move to get up and realized she was still naked under the blanket.
Where are my clothes?
Doc poked his head in the door.
Being washed, though I'm not sure they're fit for anything more than rags. What with all the bullet holes and rips. Somme is finding something that might fit you well enough. Give her a few moments. She was going to tend to that last night, but got distracted. Things tend not to be immediate here.
Doc came in. Anya saw that the circles were dark under his eyes, as if he hadn't been to sleep at all during the night. He was wearing the same shirt and jeans he'd had on yesterday, all of it spotted with blood and mud, the sweat stains deep under his arms.
Lovely morning. It quit raining about an hour ago. About damn time, eh? Sometimes it rains so much here I expect to see Noah pulling up with his ark.
He came to her side, stooped over and reached for her hand, taking her pulse and looking at his watch.
You heal quickly, Anya. Quite a remarkable young lady, you... I'd like to say it's my medical skill responsible, but I don't think so. I thought for certain the lot of you would need a hospital. Your friend's faring all right, too, but he will probably sleep away a chunk of the morning. In fact, he should. He insisted on being in here with you last night. Quite the fellow you have not to leave your side.
He dropped her hand and shook his head.
I couldn't save one of them, you know. The fellow with a broken arm bled out on me last night. Internal injuries, too, judging by all the bruising on his chest. From what the tins tell me, you hit him pretty hard with a sword and kicked him for good measure. Not that he didn't have it coming. The fellow with a maimed hand, he'll be all right. Missing all but the thumb, though. Couldn't find the pieces in the mud to even try to reattach them. sleeping now. I sedated him pretty good. I'm limited on what I have to work with, you understand. I used some tranquilizers that work on oxen on the fellow, on Lou as well. Used up most of my medicines and supplies on the lot of you, and I'll probably have a devil of a time replacing them. Retired and all, and not licensed here anymore. Just never bothered to get it renewed. Couldn't be helped, though, I suppose, using my supplies. I just couldn't let you all lie there untended.
Thank you for taking care of me and Lou.
Don't expect things like this to happen in the jungle. Violence is city stuff. That's why I retired here, for the peace. Some years back, I came here on holiday to see the temples and decided to stay, settled in Chiang Mai. The wife had passed. I converted to Buddhism when I fell in with some monks, learned to speak Thai. Not the easiest language to master, don't you know? Then you have the hill tribes, of course, which all have their own languages, like these Tins. Took me more than a little while to master Tin speak, as I call it. Still don't know all of it, but enough to get me by. Anyway, I eventually quit my practice in London, shipped some stuff over, and started a limited practice up here in Chiang Mai. Didn't make near so much the money, but the climate suited me better.
He tugged up the blanket and checked her leg, blotting it with a rag dipped in peroxide.
I even hung my shingle out in Mae Hong Sung for a brief time, though it is a spit of a place, tiny but with a beautiful vista. It's where the tourists go who intend to do some trekking to the various hill tribes. Did some trekking myself, and that's how I decided to settle out here in the middle of nowhere. The Tins helped me build a house about a year back, have two rooms. That's quite the thing, don't you know? Two rooms.
He checked her arms next. The right one had a strip of gauze wrapped just above the elbow. It had taken the brunt of the bamboo splinters when one of the men had shot the building.
You're lucky they found me at home, Anya. I still travel to Chengdao, Chong Kong, Tatong for the boat rides, Mae Salong and the national parks. And as I said, the climate here agrees with me, and I can still get around pretty well. Might as well hike, eh? No TV reception out here. Northern Thailand is considerably cooler than the rest of the country, and I like that it is a virtual melting pot of cultures. Folks from Myanmar and Yunnan, China. But I do babble, don't you know? Wonder what's keeping Som. Shouldn't take her that long to find something suitable for...
As if his words had been a gentle summons, the broad-shouldered woman entered, holding some folded garments in front of her. She smiled warmly and handed them to Doc, bowed and left with a few backward glances over her shoulder. He held the clothes out to Anya.
Ah, I've been talking up a storm. I shouldn't let my tongue wag, so it's not polite. How about you do a little talking for a change? How about you answer some of the Tin's questions? Like, what did you do to get those men so angry? And what brought you three out here to the middle of nowhere in the first place?
It would only be polite. All right, sure. I'm an archaeologist. Lou, too.
Anya proceeded to tell him about their trip to Nam Lud, and then hiring Zakarat to take them on a little more adventurous caving expedition, and about her plans to do a special for Chasing History's Monsters on the teak coffins and the remains. She left out the part about the voice in her head and finding the skull bowl and the dog tags, but she did mention the treasure and the need to tell the authorities about it and the gunman. She didn't tell him about the ones she'd killed on the mountainside, or that there might be more of them with the treasure.
I think they were Vietnamese, all the men with the guns, though they might have been Laotian, I suppose.
And so the men were shooting at you because they didn't want witnesses to report their ill-gotten gold, or who might come back and steal it. Not such a lovely vacation for the two of you, eh? Relic traffickers you ran into, no doubt, come from Myanmar or Laos, going to Myanmar or Laos or China and using the cave as a stopping point while arranging for buyers. It sounds like the same operation some folks used to follow for drug trafficking. And poor beautiful Thailand is once again caught in the middle, and the unfortunate Tins were the victims yesterday. Two villagers were killed during the ruckus, two young men shot dead, leaving their families to grieve.
In the school, the bullets went through the wall.
Two boys, well, two young men. Bun Mi and Tao were their names. I know most of the villagers here, and I'd gone fishing with Bun Mi on more than one occasion. good boys they were. And the saddest thing is, Anya, the Tins couldn't give a whit for treasure. They couldn't care less. They lived simply, want for little, and wouldn't pay the proverbial rat's ass for whatever those men were smuggling. They're not interested in Lou's wealth or your celebrity. I'll leave you to dress, and then I'll meet you across the way. If you're going to the authorities, you'll want to talk to the man with the maimed hand to get some information. He speaks a little English, was mumbling it while I worked on him. I've got something left that'll bring him around.
Anya watched him leave, looking at Luartaro, who was still sleeping soundly, and then rose and got dressed. The clothes she'd been given had belonged to a boy, she guessed, from the cut of them. She wondered if they were from one of the two who had died. The gray pants fit snugly and hit her just above the ankles, and the shirt, made of coarse green broadcloth, rubbed a little uncomfortably against her skin. There were no pockets she could put her hands in. She couldn't complain, though. These people had showed her compassion in spite of what she'd brought into their village, and she doubted they had a lot of clothes to spare. She blamed herself for the two boys' deaths and for Luartaro being injured. Had she done things differently, she could have confronted the gunman in the jungle.
Maybe I could have. Hindsight is always perfect.
She wondered about Zakarat. She'd check on him, too, and ask Doc if his ankle was sprained or broken. But first, she'd see to the remaining gunman. Doc was right. She wanted some information from him. She'd also want to borrow that old motorcycle she'd been offered yesterday, and retrieve the map someone had been drawing. She slipped on a pair of sandals that fit her surprisingly well. They were made of woven reeds with a strip of oxhide for a sole. Taking a last look at Luartaro, she left the hut, nodding to Somme on her way out.